Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona, Rebecca, I realize we didn't drop an episode last week, and that's because a lot of information, a lot of things were changing on the domestic EB5 front. When I saw this one come across my desk, no money, no honey, I wondered what's going on. So ladies, what's happening on the EB5 front?
Right. Quite a lot happened this month, actually far more than one podcast can really take. So we decided to split things up a little bit. This particular episode, No Money, No Honey, is really focusing more on what do pre-RIA investors do in the event of RC termination for non-payment. And of course, we have our resident Rebecca and David here to speak about this. Welcome, guys.
Thanks, Mona.
Thank you, Mona.
Well, I would say, David and Mona, even though USCIS came out with all this information here in October, I still think we have a lot of questions or uncertainty still.
We do, but let's take it one topic at a time. Here's the issue. USCIS stated this week that they expect there to be a large volume of investors to be affected by terminations of previously designated regional centers based solely on non-compliance. So I thought, wait a minute, let's give this some context and try and explain to our audience, what are we talking about? So David, non-compliance, what are we talking about?
Well, non-compliance is where the regional center or the new commercial enterprise or even the job-creating enterprise do not comply with the new provisions of RIA, that's the Reform and Integrity Act of 2022, and therefore various penalties and other problems, including termination of regional centers, might kick in.
Right, but they specifically mentioned where they did not mention before that non-payment of the integrity fee will result in termination. This time it was there in black and white.
That's also, in my mind, not included in non-compliance, but it's become highlighted and we need to address it very carefully so we can have the regional centers and the NCEs safely protected.
I agree. I just wanted to say the definition of non-compliance, right? Because there's two parts to it. There's the administrative part, and that's where we're talking about the fees being paid. And then also the other part of it with fraud or misappropriation of funds. So there's two parts of the non-compliance.
Right. But right now, I think what we are talking about today is not necessarily fraud, but it's a regional center's non-compliance with the annual integrity fund fee, because that's what USCIS is saying that they're going to look primarily at for termination of regional centers by early next year. Just for our audience, what is the annual integrity fund fee and who pays what?
Okay. The regional center is due to pay this. Probably they'll recover from the new commercial enterprise. The amounts to be paid are $20,000 if there are more than 20 investors in that regional center, and it drops down to $10,000 if there are 20 or less investors in that regional center.
But what if there's no investors in that regional center?
Then they'll pay the minimum, the way immigration's interpreting it. They're obliged to make the payment.
Right. I think that wasn't clear before, because I do know that last year there were several regional centers who didn't pay because they thought we don't have any investors yet, so therefore we don't have to pay. But USCIS seems to want money from everybody.
Yeah, so we've been advising clients that they need to pay, and several did some catch-up payments. And all of our regional center clients, even if they're not adding further investors, are paying this annual amount.
Rebecca, what about rental regional centers? Is there any difference?
No difference. If you have, like David said, 21 or more investors, you pay to $20,000 and that $10,000. What David made a good point too, that they might be going to have the NCEs pay that fee.
Right. Well, what happens, I think the next step really is what happens if the regional center doesn't pay? And I think USCIS has made that very clear.
I believe that if 90 days pass, then the USCIS can terminate that regional center. However, they did bring in a carve out. They're actually being a little kinder than usual, which is really appreciated. And they've said that if there are pending I-526s or I-829s, they will allow those to be finally adjudicated and trigger the termination while that is taking place. And that's a major breakthrough.
Well, that is, because that's grandfathering in. That was not pre-REA. The situation pre-REA was that if a regional center was terminated, it would be a material change for an investor to go to another regional center. So that investor would be in a problem. But the other interesting factor is that USCIS is expecting a large volume of investors to be displaced, so to speak, because the figures that are out is that on March 15th, 2022, there were 632 regional centers. And as of, I believe, June 30th of 2023, USCIS have stated that they have received only 357 form I-956 applications, and of which only 250 of the previously designated regional centers have paid the integrity fund fee. So it looks like a lot of regional centers, rather, have not paid.
Well, I think that comes from the fact that there was no clarification. This happened, you know, just this month in October, where USCIS is now coming out that regional centers have to pay the fee, or it seems like that, in order for them to continue or not be terminated. That's why a lot of regional centers, you know, and even us as attorneys, some of us were advising not to do that because, you know, you're going to pay, rules changed. So it's just a lot of confusion from the beginning.
Right.
So clarification, I believe that there'll be a catch-up, that regional centers who want to remain in the game will pay. But as Mona said, there will be a fallout of several who are not going to pay and they just do not want to remain involved, although they have existing investors. I think that those regional centers may be subjecting themselves to some level of litigation because it was inherent in their contract that they would see this through to the end.
Oh, that's a new spin, David. I didn't think about that. Of course, investors could litigate, but investors could just easily hop off and go somewhere else as well.
That's one of the ways. The other is they may come to an agreement with the regional center that they group together and take the $10,000 or the $20,000 and split it amongst themselves and pay that money on behalf of the regional center to keep things going so they don't have to find and go through the real headache of changing regional centers.
Yeah, it's not going to be so easy, actually, to, I just said that they could hop off and go somewhere else. We are discovering in the new post-REA world that really affiliating with new regional centers is pretty tough.
Yeah, the regional centers and taking on other projects are very concerned about the liability that is now flowing from REA.
That's true.
It's all very burdensome. So there is that concern. There are some organizations that are trying to maintain the compliance and take care of this for investors and for the...
Really, David? There are some organizations, you don't want to tell the audience which organization?
This is not an advertising program, so I didn't pay any fees.
How many guesses do we get?
No, I completely agree with David. It's the time limit. So now we have somewhat some clarification. You have to do it with before the end of the year, so December 30th. And not only do you have to pay, you know, you have to pay the 2023-2024 year integrity fund fees. So it's like how quickly can everyone get together? And like you said, David, if these other regional centers, they're going to have to conduct due diligence to see what has been happening in the past on these other projects. So it really is limited time.
Well, I actually thought I saw something, please correct me if I'm wrong, that you have the month of October to pay the integrity fees or penalties will kick in. And then by the end of December, they can go forward with the terminations.
Yes. So I think if the regional center really wanted to take their time, they have, I would say, the latest December 30th. If not, they're going to get the termination. And even then, you said they will reject integrity fund fee payments for fiscal year 2023 and 2024 if not received before December 30th.
So here we have a situation where you guys have spoken about the situation where everybody is together and somebody will pay somewhere, but there is going to be somewhere a regional center or an investor who gets left out in the cold. So here's my questions to you both. Priority dates. Say an investor, through no fault of his own, is left out, his regional center has been terminated, and the priority date really matters to this particular investor because they have children who are aging out. What happens, Rebecca?
Are you pre-RIA or post-RIA?
Well, is there a difference?
Tomorrow? December?
So, well, I mean, under what USCIS is saying is that for pre-RIA cases, now we don't have to worry about it being a material change, right? So they said they're going to allow the RIA rules to come in into effect for those pre-RIA. As for the priority date, I mean, David, you could chip in here, but I feel like there's still confusion about this.
Well, I think David and I disagree on the priority date issue. I think, David, you think that the priority date, you don't lose it, whereas I think you do lose it unless there's fraud.
Thank you for arguing for me, Mona. Yes, I do not agree. I believe that the whole intent and the spirit of this is to keep those people protected where they were approved for I-526s from pre-RIA filings.
But the RIA actually states that the priority date goes unless there is fraud. I mean, that's actually in the legislation.
Right. I just have the sense this will be interpreted a little more broadly because of the horrible effect of not doing so.
Here's my thing on it. It's because I think there's confusion on whether or not, because I thought at first too, the petition had to be approved. But I kind of read into the regulations a bit more right before having this discussion. And they classified as anyone who has a conditional permanent residence or anyone who meets a definition under section 1154A1H. And then you have to go look up what is 1154A1H. Look that up. It said for any person who's seeking, you know, investment into EB-5 program, but who's also eligible for such classification.
So you basically mean somebody who's actually waiting, because we know there's still a lot of pre-RIA cases waiting.
Exactly. So if you were eligible at the time of filing, and let's say, for instance, and I feel that this could mean for the administrative part of it. So let's say a regional center doesn't go forward with paying their integrity fees. This could include those I-526 petitions that are still pending without approval. So I would assume that there would still be eligible to continue if the regional center doesn't comply. Again, it's an interpretation, but that's what I read. And I've been reading this over and over, and it's still, like I said, it's still up for interpretation.
No, I think you're right, Rebecca, because, you know, USCIS keeps repeating they want to interpret RIA in a manner that permits good faith investors to retain their eligibility. And I suppose the priority date is part of the eligibility. So, yeah, there is an argument there, but it's only to be seen. What I did not like was what USCIS said, that they were allowing investors to be able to deal with RFEs or NOIDs. And the word NOIDS coming in on, you know, as an impact of regional center termination is something that an individual investor may not be able to handle.
Yeah, you've had information from the regional center if they're not available. But most of that information is going to come from the project. So you really need to get your project information to prove compliance, job creation, and so on. The regional center is a little more formal. And if you've got all your documents previously, you shouldn't need a whole lot more from the regional center to help with a response to a NOID or an RFE.
Do either of you know whether there's any difference to previously approved regional centers and post-RIA approved regional centers, if there are any out there?
Well, USCIS embraces deference but never acts on it. It's a fact of life. They will find every reason possible not to exercise deference. And that's the experience we're having now.
Well, they say here, it was from Grassley, because they said with the intention of what he had was that, I think they're blurring RIA and pre-RIA cases, but he's saying that the intention is to have the old regulations still apply to the pre-RIA cases unless the regional center is terminated. And from my understanding, it's from that non-administrative, non-compliance part of this.
Right. And there's been a lot of litigation about all of that. Let me ask you, what exactly is the Integrity Fund for, and why do you think USCIS is making such a fuss about it?
To be facetious, boondoggles to Europe and the rest of the world. But the practical action of Congress was that gives the USCIS the ability and the wherewithal to go out and do your site inspections, check on every aspect of any EB-5 investor, even in home countries. And although they now have this funding for it, doesn't mean they weren't doing it before. I've had a case where three officers showed up in Shanghai coming out of Beijing. One was fraud, one was consular, and the other was USCIS. The three of them showed up to do an investigation. The interesting part is that I think they missed the whole point. They approved the case at the end of the day after we filed some notices against them, and they'd missed the very, very issue that they'd found and didn't use it properly. But that's a luck issue than good practice. But the Immigration Act and the USCIS have that ability and are exercising it, and they're showing up at all sorts of places. They showed up the other day at a single investor where the deal filed in 2017 for the I-829 and started trying to say why they're not still working and where's the money and why can't you show me all of this stuff? And we're having to fight that, notwithstanding that I spoke to the officers when they were there. I spoke to their supervisor, and they simply ignored the principle in law. This is deference, I guess, that they had qualified. They qualified at the time of the I-526. The money was in. They're not challenging that the money was in or not, which is ridiculous. And then they're challenging whether or not the business should have continued post the filing of the I-829. Now, this is not only for single investors or pooled investors. This is for regional centers as well. That's what they're doing. So they're sending out unqualified, inexperienced people who are going on fishing expeditions. And even if they catch the smallest little thing, they think they've got a big fish and they start sending out these notices and noids. It's not an easy game. These guys funded and they're going to show they're using these funds to the great benefit of the United States. And when you analyze it, all this thing is costing the clients money and giving us aggravation.
You know, it's a subject for another podcast, but there has been perhaps a little too much of the policing. I agree with you, David, because there has to be a happy medium here somewhere. But at the same time, unfortunately, you know, the industry itself did bring it on itself too, because there was the fraud, there was the lack of integrity.
Yeah, but I think what they should do is maybe spend some of this funds to educate their adjudicators or those who are out in the field.
I love that, educator adjudicators. Just get straight to it, Rebecca.
Yeah, because like David said, it's costing clients money. It's wasting a lot of our time and the investors' time and the project's time. Real business and real things are happening. But at the same time, now we're having to take a step back and to correct issues that didn't need any of this in the first place.
I have a question for you, if you both. USCIS kind of contradicted themselves because they said we are not going to accept a fee paid after a certain date. And yet earlier they did say that they were going to impose late fees. So here's the question. What if a regional center decides to pay early and they pay for 10 investors and then maybe the 29th of December, they suddenly have another four investors, which puts them over the 10 investor mark and they've underpaid? Is that what USCIS is talking about with late fees, or is there going to be a reimbursement?
I think the answer is late fees are the same as if you pay a bank late. However, the date of December 31st is not a controlling date. The date is 30th of September. That's when you count the number of investors in. It's after the fact. You then file your return and your payment, so you know exactly how many investors you had pre-October 1 of that year. I can't see this becoming a problem. It doesn't compute on a logical basis.
As we all know, all the regional centers had to file their I-956 and amendments. Is anybody aware of any update on these 956 and amendments? Has there been any approvals?
Yes, I do. First of all, there have been some approvals, and there have even been some approvals of the I-526s and I-526Es. Not many, but they have started coming through. The issue with the 956 is that it has to be filed before you can file a 956F for a new project.
Right.
To get your receipt on an I-526 if you can file your I-526E. However, our understanding is that they will not adjudicate that E form until they've approved the F form. What happens, the regional center on the I-956, which is pending, I'm not sure, because all they're looking for is a receipt at this point. If they deny later, I think there are going to be all kinds of problems, but we see that they seem to be going ahead with that.
Well, I haven't heard of any rejections, not even rejections of amendments, but all I've heard is that the approvals don't have one yet, but the approvals all seem to have been for rural categories.
The one we have was for a regular TEA.
Oh, wow. How long did that take?
About 6 or 7 months. It is, you know, amazing.
Yeah, that means most of the officers are busy doing post-RIA cases, which means the pre-RIA cases are still languishing.
I know. I think that's what most of the investors are going to want to know, what's happening to the pre-RIA cases. But if I'm not mistaken, for the older regional centers, those who were designated pre-RIA, they could have still filed an I-956F, even filing the I-956 for RIA designation.
I think that's correct. And I think it is only for new regional centers.
Yeah. But how about those who have filed an F form, for instance, and, you know, still maybe pending their I-956 is, you know, still hasn't been filed. Do you think USCIS is, are they just still going to wait for the I-956 before making an adjudication on the I-956F?
And before you answer that, I want to also ask you, what about material updates, these 956Fs, USCIS allowing any interfiling?
Yes, USCIS is allowing interfiling as long as it's non-material. Material and non-material are defined nowhere, so who knows what they'll do with it when they get it.
Yeah.
If you haven't had an adjudication, the recommendation is file it, call it non-material, and see what they say. You may have to still refile later if they reject filing.
I can imagine they're going to reject it, David, because by rejecting it, you would have to pay another fee. And if you're trying to slip something in through an interfiling, to look at it saying, wait a minute, you're just trying to avoid paying the fee.
That's a good observation, very cynical, nonetheless.
Well, I think most of us, because we've been doing this for so long, and we've seen some discussion on material changes, hopefully we'll know what we can interfile from what we cannot.
Well, we've only really just touched on some of the changes which were announced this week that we really have to discuss sustainment of investment and other things. But at least, you know, we've got some feedback from USCIS because we were all so disappointed after that stakeholders meeting earlier in the year.
Yeah, this has certainly given us some enlightenment. It's answered a lot of questions and left some unanswered, and we just have to muddle through until we get answers to everything. A likelihood maybe in a couple of years, but we'll get it eventually.
Yeah, I know they said that, you know, information is going to come out on USCIS's website rather than just coming out with like a policy memo, which I would prefer. We did that back in, I think it was May of 2012. That was actually pretty good with policy memo on defining certain terms and going through the full filing. But David, maybe that'll be a few years from now.
All right. Well, again, this is not the place, but there has been a number of cases and the judges and the courts haven't really been pro plaintiff at this stage. It has been more towards they have leaned more towards the government way of things, or maybe the courts are just tired of EB-5 investors sending out lawsuits.
Well, if USCIS can get their act together, there wouldn't be so many lawsuits.
On a positive note, I believe that this is a great step forward. We encourage more of it from immigration. It gives us better tools to work with and to advise our clients. And I think that moving forward in a way that this program is going to do well, there's a lot of in the background to try and have the program renewed and continued after the 5-year expiry. So this is being done proactively now, all very exciting and very positive.
That's so positive, David. And I do hope that USCIS do continue with the same good faith provisions that they have. They do seem to be showing to investors, especially if a regional center is terminated for lack of paying their integrity fee, even if it's a mistake. Or what would happen if a project failed?
Well, Mona, not just termination of regional centers, but also NCEs and JCEs that are non-compliant, projects that fail. We see that investors can still continue. It's a process, and we want to see them, you know, succeed in getting cards.
No, I agree. There's a lot to say, and there's going to be a lot more to say as we move forward. But we haven't touched the area of redeployment or sustainment of investment, because I think, David and Rebecca, that's a topic in, you know, which needs a complete podcast for itself.
Oh, so much to say on that.
Yeah, and bear in mind that the purpose of this law, as expressed by Congress, was to protect investors, and hopefully immigration will continue taking that intention through to the investors, be it an old, pre-Rio, or the new ones.
David, thank you for your pearls of wisdom, and be assured we are going to call on you again.
Mona and Rebecca, it's really been a pleasure. I've been the thorn between the two roses, in fact, the two honeys, and I've really enjoyed this program, and I think we've given a lot of excellent messages to the audience. Thank you.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshawlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.